Welcome to the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we discuss spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode 15, Ecstasy. Today we're going to talk about the many, many ways we humans try to reach ecstasy. A short tribute to my mother, the queen of ecstasy. A tale of two or three sweaters. A conversation about the ethics of ecstasy. Some comments from some friends and some listeners and some new clients. And as always, a surprise ending. Ecstasy. Wow. Well, the spiritual definition of ecstasy is simply the uninterrupted flow of divine energy. Ecstasy is energy moving with absolute freedom to express itself and experience itself in its highest form. The imperative of the human experience of ecstasy is consciousness of all of the bodies, whole body consciousness. In fact, when all of your bodies, physical, mental, emotional, ethical, intuitional, and spiritual, are all in concert with each other, ecstasy occurs. You feel it in your body, in your mind, in your emotional makeup, in your instinctual self, and in your spiritual awareness. Each of us, on some level, longs for that kind of experience, the balance of life that creates that kind of experience. The new hip phrase in spiritual circles is called integral life. I think that was a phrase coined by maybe Ken Wilber or somebody in that kind of philosophical ilk. But I'm talking about the longing, which is really the longing to be ecstatically alive. All of the bodies have to be participatory in an integrated life to create this sense of ecstasy. And at the same time, we can't really control it. We can't really call it up and say, happen now. We can have the discipline to do our practices, which keep us as balanced and as healthy as possible, but only in those moments that I call grace does everything really line up so that everything is operating in sort of concentric circles, and ecstasy expresses itself through us. However, while we can't control ecstasy, nor will it appear in any given moment at our command, it follows that one cannot abuse any one of the bodies and evolve the spirit or achieve ecstasy. One cannot be an emotionally angry individual and evolve his or her worldview. It can't be done. And I'm not talking about spurts of anger that occur, you know, because that are justifiable. I'm talking about an angry individual who talks anger talk and thinks anger thinks all the time. Simultaneously, one cannot be stuck in narrow-mindedness and be wise. One of my favorite idioms is intelligence and stupidity cannot cohabitate in one mind. If you abuse your mental body with idiotic, racist, fundamentalist, separatist thoughts, you simply cannot reach the ecstasy that I'm talking about, the ecstasy that is offered in truth. Now, you can't be wise totally all the time, but you can't be stupid any of the time and expect wisdom to overrule your mental barriers to it. For most of us, this fully integrated life of which I speak comes in just fits and spurts. But there are times when we stumble into those moments of wholeness, body wholeness, ecstasy. So we know what we're looking for. We know what we're longing for because grace gives them to us from time to time. Right now in our global cultures, there are tons of ways people are seeking ecstasy. In colleges right now, there's this new movement called the CrossFit movement, and it's these kids who are just like desperate to have their bodies in such perfect shape that they can do all kinds of strange and bizarre things piled on top of each other with the belief that that creates some sort of ecstatic sensation that they can hold on to. The movement that in my day was called EST is now called Landmark. And I understand that it's making a great big comeback, especially in university communities, where the kids are desperately seeking ecstasy. Of course, some of them are using alcohol and drugs to try to get there, but some of them are using these external belief systems, the science of mind or Landmark or various kinds of classes that they can take. All of this is about seeking this goal. But on the other end of that spectrum, there are other ways to try to seek it through religion, through Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't want to be an addict, you can be a recovering addict and still try to seek this ecstasy. Also, prosperity thinking and other similar modalities can be used as drugs toward that end. All of these are attempts at finding ecstasy, but none of them use an integrated approach. None of them point the practitioner toward whole body consciousness. There are, of course, some people who are absolutely living authentically and who are excited about the evolving impulse that flows through them, that they honestly can feel it. They honestly work in it. And when you look at them, they honestly glow. These people are very alive. How do they do it? They honor beingness over doingness. Ecstasy flows when beingness evokes your doingness. When your to-do list is filled with errands or mundane chores, and when it makes you tired to even look at it, ecstasy is not possible. But when your to-do list is filled with things that you want to do, because when done, they bring joy to you or to your family or to your community, then ecstasy is flowing. Now, interestingly, the actual to-do list, the words on it, may not be any different between the person who's fatigued by it and the person who is enlivened by it. It's the joy versus the fatigue. When you look at this list, that is the difference. This is what tells you whether you are operating in an ecstatic flow. When all of your bodies are in sync, what actually happens that creates this ecstatic feeling is that subject and object boundaries disappear. We're in full embrace with life. We're making love to life, so to speak. And so what we do and how we are doing it is coming up out of who we are, out of our beingness. But there's an irony in this principle in ecstasy that demands our full surrender. Whether they be the practices of something like CrossFitting or Landmark or Science of Minding or the practices of being an addict or the practices of being a recovering addict or spiritual practices, all of these practices are things that we're using to try to find a way to hold on to something that we believe is real and solid. However, this is the irony. The only way to truly allow ecstasy to move through our lives is to let go of our belief that it's solid. Holding on to something restricts you. Letting go expands your consciousness. As I said earlier, it's grace that takes us there. Amazing grace. I sat recently at my mother's bedside as she died, and I realized over the few days that I was there that her son principle is in ecstasy. And that means that she's deeply rooted in the attempt to reach whole body consciousness. Or at least that she, for her entire life, she felt the call to try to achieve whole body integration. But the key here is whole body, meaning all of your bodies, all of her bodies. I remember that I had watched my mother try to achieve ecstasy during my childhood and adolescence. Each time we moved to a new town, you know, my father was a minister, so we moved fairly often. And each time we moved, she would start over and she would enter this new community with a new commitment to doing good and creating happiness in her family and for the people that she met and for the new friends that she made. But doing is the key word there. I realized that I had watched her for 60-something years trying to do ecstasy. And I imagine she was trying to do it for the 30-something years that she lived before that. In her last 2 or 3 weeks of life, her mental body decided to die. Her emotional body had wrapped up its loose ends and was ready to die. She literally made an ethical decision to die, which is admirable. She'd been ill for several months, which had started a downward spiral in other physical ways. And when she fell and broke her hip there close to the end of her life, she simply decided and articulated that she didn't want to live any longer. But her physical body was not in alignment. Her physical body was not on the same page with the rest of her bodies. That reptilian brain that controls the involuntary systems of the body is programmed to hold on to life, and it just keeps on trying. She had no food, no water, no heart medication, which we had believed was keeping her alive, and no insulin, which we had believed was keeping her alive, for days and days and days. Nothing but morphine. And her heart kept beating and her lungs kept gasping. Life did not want to let go of this woman. All of her bodies needed to be in alignment. That's the truth of ecstasy. Now, finally, all of her bodies did come into alignment. I'm not saying that when all of your bodies are in alignment, you die. But in Mother's case, that's finally what happened. If her physical body had been in alignment with the idea of dying from the get-go, it probably would have happened more quickly. But when everything finally got there, it happened. And we were there. And it was really very peaceful, finally, at the end. Ecstasy occurs in ways that are beyond belief and beyond our willful reach. But when all of the aspects of our being are responding to each other perfectly, ecstasy occurs. How does that happen? Not through doingness, but through beingness. You can't do ecstasy. Nothing you do can achieve true ecstasy. Not drugs, not crossfitting, not landmarking, not science of minding, not even spiritual practicing. One can only be ecstasy. And one can only be ecstasy when one lets go of all willful doingness and allows beingness to penetrate every corner of every aspect of every body. Alright, now we get to talk about knitting. As you know, this is always my favorite part, and so I always kind of perk up when we get here. Today I'm going to talk about process knitting versus product knitting. Process knitting is when you just love the process. You knit for the sake of knitting. And a process knitter has several projects going at once and chooses the one in the moment based on her mood in that moment. There's like fat needle knitting if you're not in the mood to like really concentrate and if your eyes are hurting. And there's detailed knitting and mindless knitting and going somewhere knitting. There's all kinds of knitting. A process knitter buys yarn for the sake of buying yarn without really a project in mind. And a process knitter often has to have a separate room just for her stash. A product knitter wants the product. A product knitter wants a sweater, buys the yarn, knits a sweater. Wants a gift for someone, buys the yarn, knits a gift. Wants a blankie, knits a blankie, etc. Usually only one project going at a time, doesn't have a big stash other than like odds and ends because she uses yarn very efficiently. And she's interested in the product. Now, I have always claimed to be a product knitter. I like to select a project for myself or for someone else, purchase the yarn, walk through all the steps of creating the product, and it's from the finished product that I receive my joy. I actually sometimes, I think, have moments of ecstasy when I have completed a project. I'm not comfortable with lots of projects sitting around vying for my attention. And yet, as I listen to a few of these podcasts, I find that process is what I talk about the most. I find that to be kind of interesting. Of course, every knitter is something of a process knitter, because if you don't enjoy the process, you just go buy the darn sweater. There wouldn't be any reason to knit it. All right, so I want to tell you about this process. It was a process to create a product, of course. My son Ben is probably my biggest fan. He loves his hand-knitted thingies that I've made for him. So he decided he wanted a sweater jacket. And he asked me for it. He said, could you knit me a sweater jacket? Oh, of course I'll knit you a sweater jacket. We looked at a couple of books. We found a pattern that we like. He went with me to pick out the yarn. I knitted feverishly. I went to the button store. I picked out these tray expensive French buttons to go on it. I patiently lint brushed off all the little hairs that it shed all over me and my knitting chair and everything that my blankie that I throw across my lap when I'm knitting. Now, it had a few little errors in it, but I'm one of those product knitters who says, you know, who's going to notice? If somebody really looks hard enough to see this error, then they need to get a life. So I'm very forgiving of myself when I make little errors in my knitting. And it was stunningly beautiful. The errors were brilliantly hidden when I finally put the whole thing together. We tried it on. It fit. His word for it was insane. That means good, by the way. All right, so I blocked it. When he tried it on the next time, it was too big. It would have fit a linebacker. So I said, no problem, not to worry. Let me wash it. I'll shrink it up a little bit, and I'll re-block it, and it'll fit. So I washed it, and it felted. It felted. This sweater that I spent hours and hours and hours on felted. It's like the size of a, you know, doll now. It would fit maybe a two-year-old. So anyway, next. I carefully removed the tray expensive French buttons, went back to the store, bought some new yarn, worked with the same pattern, carefully knitted it to perfection. This time I was very careful about not making any errors. Sewed the buttons back on, tried it back on him. Insane. Blocked the sweater. It was too big. Daddy gets this one. I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. And I finally realized that the pattern that I was using was for a square person. The pattern was like a little square sweater. My son is a triangle person. He has been working out all of his life. He's got like this tiny, tiny little waist, and he's got this big, broad shoulders, and he's a triangle. And I had been trying to fit a triangle into a square. All right, third sweater. After I realized that my son was a triangle and that these books were square, I also realized that one must swatch and block before one knits $150 worth of yarn into a sweater. So this time I swatched and blocked. I found another pattern by a younger designer who used younger models who were a little more triangle-y. And even then, I adjusted the math a little to make the sweater a triangle. And I also promised myself that this one would be perfect. I corrected every error, even if it meant ripping out. I even took, after I put it all together, I didn't like the way the sleeves were. I took the sleeves off. I re-knitted the top part of the sleeves and redesigned it a little bit so that they fit perfectly. This time I took my son to the button store with me, and he picked out some even more tray expensive Italian buttons. But it blocked perfectly. It's insane. The other night he called and said he had worn it to a party, and he's calling it now his girl magnet. It apparently attracted a lot of attention. Oy. So anyway, the amazing learning of that process did not depress me. Losing the two sweaters, I mean, the felted one, okay, I was a little bit depressed, but then I figured out that I've got some new pot holders that look really hot, so fine. I wasn't pleased with the $150 expenditures for all of these sweaters. Of course, I never buy like cheap yarn. I have to like go buy fab. I don't know what's wrong with me. But anyway, I was very pleased with the fact that my husband now has a beautiful sweater with French buttons, and my son has his beautiful Italian buttoned girl magnet. After suffering all of these devastating defeats of the first sweater and the disappointment of the second sweater, I find that the final product actually gave me a moment of ecstasy. My bodies were all in alignment. The middle body had been whipped into shape by the traumatic results of the felting, and my emotional body was surrendered to the need of patience and of not ignoring my errors, and my physical body was willing to knit and knit and knit and knit till I got there, and my ethical body was willing to see my errors as lessons rather than failures. My intuitional body knew that it was right this time, and my spiritual body just bowed to the process, and all of a sudden, ecstasy occurred for just that moment when my son put on that sweater and said, "Insane," again. My knitting to-do list is absolutely driven by the desire to achieve ecstasy. I have to admit it. I know I said you can't do ecstasy, but sometimes a doing results in ecstasy. All right, so now we're going to talk about the politics of ethical behavior. The politics of ethical behavior, if ecstasy is the influence that you experience in your ethical body. The primary thing I'm trying to say in this podcast is that ecstasy comes from an inner alignment, not an outer event. If you're looking for ecstasy, look inside. If any two of your bodies are out of alignment, ecstasy cannot express itself. If you're thinking about how much you want to lose weight while eating a piece of pie, you're out of alignment. If you're using alcohol or drugs or sex or food or golf or, dare I say, knitting to avoid the realities of your life, you're out of alignment. In fact, many of the so-called ethical decisions that we make these days are our attempts to search for and capture and hold on to ecstasy. And of course, they almost always fail because one body is almost always ignored in our decision-making process. The body that gets ignored the most is the intuitional body. It just gets pushed aside. The intuitional body takes in unseen, unheard, unsubstantiated information. And we're taught not to trust that kind of information. In fact, we're taught to mistrust that information. So we generally ignore it. That throws us as individuals and as a society out of whack. Ecstasy is sent to the back of the line time and time again because we ignore our intuitional selves. We especially ignore intuitional processing when we're making decisions about our laws. Have you noticed that? Now, here's an example, one that you may not agree with, but it seems radically obvious to me. We recently had the opportunity in California to legalize marijuana. To me, this made total intuitional sense, in addition to just rational, logical sense. It would kick drug trafficking in the gut. It would generate tons of revenue badly needed by our state. It would decriminalize something that is not a crime. It's no more a crime to smoke marijuana than it is to drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes or eat too much sugar. And because medical marijuana dispensaries are already in place and successfully operating, the infrastructure was there. Nothing really had to be done. It wasn't going to cost anything to create this law. It seemed to me to be a win-win for everyone concerned. Well, there were arguments like it would make it easier for kids to get it, but gee, come on. Kids can get it. I raised 3 kids in Los Angeles. Trust me, kids can get it. All the arguments were actually limp, in my opinion. But do you know who ultimately defeated that proposition? users, voting-aged users. They already have their dealer deals in place. They don't want to have to go to the store to get their weed because their dealers will deliver it. And they're afraid that the price might go up too much because, you know, what, with taxes and all. Are you kidding me? Here's what I have to say to that. Dude, it's selfish, imbalanced thinking. We're trying to create a culture that works for the common good here. We're trying to get ourselves out of debt here. We're trying to cut down on our legal and penal expenses here. And you're worried about getting your weed delivered? I don't care how much you inhale or eat or ingest in other ways, dude. Spiritual ecstasy doesn't reside in your little mind. There, that's my rant for the day. We have so many people in our culture denying the power of their selfishness. It's amazing. People who claim that words don't influence listeners are just as crazy as the crazy people who might be listening to them. Words matter. Actions matter. Words create images in the mind of the listener. Images stimulate action. If you don't know that, go back to school because you're too stupid to be out there on the loose. Furthermore, if your words and your actions are not in alignment with each other, not only do you deny yourself the possibility of experiencing divine ecstasy, but you probably help deny someone else that possibility. When I teach people about parenting, mostly what I talk about is words. Imagine your 2-year-old hearing these 2 statements from your mom. Don't fall, or watch your balance. See, one creates the image of falling, and one creates the image of dancing or walking the balance beam in gym. Words matter. Ecstasy is simply the divine flow of energy. It is energy moving with absolute freedom to express itself and experience itself in its highest form. It can only be experienced in you when all your bodies are integrated into one synchronized wholeness. I want to thank you for being so patient with me. These podcasts are slow in coming these days, and I'm not sure exactly why, except that I'm really paying attention to my intuition. My intuitional body is helping guide this whole thing. At first, when I started doing these podcasts, I was trying to do them like once a week or once every 2 weeks. But now I'm doing them as they seem to emerge up out of me. This particular time between intelligence and ecstasy, there was a long period there, but that was a period of holidays and family stuff and my mother passing away, and lots and lots and lots of things showed up that all the while I was thinking about the podcast, I was thinking about how ecstasy was moving and or not moving through me as I experienced each day. But the podcast just seemed to decide to be published when they're published. So thank you for your patience, and thank you for the letters that you've sent me, you know, encouraging me and saying, you know, we really love the podcasts. And I also want to thank everyone for this new surge of energy around this work. It's just been amazing the last few months. There's just tons and tons of new people ordering the workbooks and ordering the hard copies of the books and ordering the audio copies of the books. And I'm happy to say that I've recently digitized the books, so pretty soon they're going to be available on Kindle and some of your other readers. I'm loving creating these new workbooks for all of the dozens and dozens of people who have heard about us recently and who are ordering them. I want to thank Jim Self for his amazing work and for his generosity, because I think in a lot of ways it was an interview that I did with him that stirred this new spurt of energy around our work. And if you haven't heard that interview, it's available as a download on the homepage of my website, www.turtledreamers.com. I encourage you to go and listen to it. Now, one of the things I really want to honor today is our kind of new international audience. In the past few months, I have done workbooks for people in Germany, Switzerland, Italy, Spain, Turkey, China, Australia, Canada, Yugoslavia, Morocco, I think I'm leaving out some. It's been so much fun hearing from so many different cultures that this work really crosses cultural boundaries, and it speaks directly to the common soul from which we all emerge as unique expressions. Wow. I got this note just this morning from a man in Turkey. Dear Connie, I do not know how I will express myself. When I started to read the workbook, I became very emotional. This is me. I've tried to adapt myself to other people, and it's been very difficult. With this, I find myself. I appreciate your precious work, and thank you for connecting us to our source. Wow. Turkey. I am ecstatic. As always, thanks to Kevin Brennan for the music. Be sure to visit his website and purchase his music at his website, www.fboo.com. That's F as in Frank, Boo as in boo-boo. The link for the Ecstasy newsletter will be in the program notes for this podcast. When you go to turtledreamers.com and click on podcasts, you'll see the menu of all of them. And on the page that contains the podcast notes, there's an opportunity to make comments. So please use this link liberally. We love the comments and the discussions that evolve from them. Also on the website homepage, please notice the donation button. If you like these podcasts and would like to help me bear the expenses of making them, your donations are mighty appreciated. And while you're up the website, be sure to visit the free dream space and see what we're dreaming into existence this week and contribute your own dreams and thoughts. All of my books and products are available through the website, so click on the store and check it out. And now, as always, a surprise ending. Until next time, sweet dreams.